Lifebook VIPs, John Butcher here. Welcome to Social Month in Lifebook's VIP program. So happy to have you here with me today, and I'm really excited about our special guest that I'm going to interview. He's a highly successful entrepreneur, world-class marketing expert, and he's the most connected person I know. I really do consider this guy a relationship genius. I'm excited about this interview personally because, as many of you in the VIP program know, the social category is my category of key focus. It's the category that sort of always seems to get pushed to the bottom of the stack for Missy and me. We're not ultra social to begin with. You know, we're kind of private people. We love spending time alone together. We got a bunch of kids. We've both got big families, businesses to run. We've got busy lives in the good sense that our lives are very, very full. And if we're not careful to focus conscious attention on the social life category, it really can fall to the bottom of the stack for us. And my guest today, more than anyone else that I know, has had an immense positive impact on our social life. He's introduced us to some really amazing people. As a matter of fact, I'd say that probably my best friends that I have in my life right now were introduced to me by him. And more than anyone else I know, I would say that he's really taught us the value of the social category. This can be a life-changing category if you know how to leverage it. And my guest today certainly does know how to do that. It's my pleasure to welcome Joe Polish to the call. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you, John. Great to be here.
It's great to have you here, man. I really appreciate it. We're all really excited about this interview. So let me ask you this. When you were first starting out, before you were successful, before you were famous, did you have any idea, Joe, during the early years, how important relationship building would end up being to your career? I mean, like, have you always known that relationships were going to be a huge key to your success, to your eventual success?
Actually, no. There was nothing that was really per se strategic. I mean, maybe on a subconscious level, it was, you know, sort of a desire or feeling that I had. But most of the quote unquote success, depending on how someone, you know, defines success, that I've had, it's really been strategic byproducts of pursuing something and then along the way paying attention to what happens. Because I think no matter how strategic someone can be, you bumble your way through a lot of your life, and the beauty of Lifebook is it gives you, you know, sort of some benchmarks, and it gives you like a roadmap and a blueprint and a path, and it allows you to lay down tracks. And so certainly, you know, I kept laying down tracks along the way, and just for the listeners to know, I was really incredibly shy and introverted growing up.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, almost to the point of, you know, scared to talk to people. And as I became a teenager, you talk about the opposite sex, you know, asking a woman out or asking, you know, a girl out on dates when I was, you know, in high school. You know, I never went to prom, I never did any of that stuff because I was definitely afraid of, you know, just insecure and just a shy kid. And as
wow.
a matter of fact, it got so bad that between the ages of 16 to 18, I actually did a lot of drugs. I mean, I was in immense social anxiety. I became a drug addict, basically, and I think a lot of that had to do with just so badly wanting to connect but not knowing how, and a lot of that came from just, you know, really probably not a very healthy upbringing, a lot of bad things happening as a kid, mother dying when I was young, my father never remarrying, moving to a lot of different, you know, towns. Throughout my whole childhood, we moved every 2 years, and if you could imagine, as a kid trying to develop relationships, you just start to develop some, and then you're uprooted, and you move somewhere else. So I was kind of forced in a lot of ways to have to figure out how to develop relationships and interact, and none of it was much fun when I was a kid, although I was smiling a lot and I tried to make jokes. But I'm just saying that just so anyone that's out there going, well, you know, that's great for those extroverted people out there, but what if you're shy? What if you have a hard time? And I had to really work through that. But what I learned, John, is that whatever you fear and don't face controls you, but whatever you fear and you take steps to face, you not only can control it, you can at least get a lot better at it if you can't fully control it. But even, you know, before I present in front of audiences, and I've spoken in front of, you know, probably the largest audience, 5,000 people, my heart beats, I get nervous. It's just how you channel it. It's just what you do with it. So.
Well, let me ask you this, Joe. When did it start to turn around for you? I mean, if you were like, you know, 16, 18, you had hard times, and then going into your early 20s when your career started, when did the whole social aspect of your life start to become an asset to you versus a difficult area of your life?
Well, you know, in high school, coming back, although this is going to sound completely bizarre, when I would do drugs and smoke marijuana, I was a coke addict. You know, that was terrible. That makes you just completely paranoid. And anyway, I won't go on a long tangent on that. Once I realized that artificial means could actually make me feel better, I realized that it's a lot of my interpretation. It was a lot of what's going on in my brain. It's biochemical. And when you can get some confidence, see, confidence feels good. If you feel confident with relationships or confident in business or confident with your health, you know, depending what area where you actually have some skill and some know-how, you feel confident. And you function in life when you have confidence, and you're happy when you have gratitude. So it's really critically important to, you know, build your confidence and build gratitude. And that's what's so great about Lifebook, because through the process, it really helps you build the gratitude muscle. It really helps you build the confidence muscle. However, courage is really important. You know, I'm an entrepreneur, and two things that my good friend Dan Sullivan says that you need when you're an entrepreneur are ignorance and courage. Well, you need courage because you have to get through stuff. You need, you know, ignorance is if you really realize how hard it was, you know,
and never do it.
Right. So there, you know, delusion is useful to a certain degree because, you know, or denial, I should say, maybe a little bit of both, because some entrepreneurs are just delusional, but if you kind of stick with it and learn some skills, then guess what? It could become a reality. And denial allows you to get through painful areas where, but you don't want to live in that state. So, you know, part of it is courage is, you know, not that you don't have fear. It just means what you do with it. You know, Dan Sullivan said when he was in the Army, he learned from a sergeant that the difference between fear and courage is fear is peeing your pants. Courage is doing what you need to do with wet pants. And so a lot
great.
Of times, it just requires a little bit of courage. And that doesn't feel good, but, you know, feelings are not facts. And you know, you're going to survive. And part of it is this how your brain manufactures stuff. Like, I'll tell you something, and this will sound also kind of funny, too. I was so afraid of asking a woman out that I had to program my brain in as I'm not, you know, it's not rejection. It's just taking a survey of who has good taste and who doesn't. And now, granted, I mean, it was probably good advice for some of these women to avoid me like the plague, you know, in the beginning. But still, you know, those are the sort of tricks that I would play on, you know, play in my head and stuff. So, you know,
when did you start? Like, what were the years, Joe, that you really started to sort of turn it around and sort of start to realize, hey, I can actually grab hold of this area of my life?
Yeah, it really was towards the end of, you know, probably high school, where I developed, I was one of the shyest kids, but then I became very popular, but not popular because of sports, certainly not popular because of grades, but because I was partying all the time. But I realized that, you know, a lot of people just live in a state of anxiety and that no one's perfect. And I'll tell you this, when I started going to 12-step groups and I started going through recovery and I saw people that in their, you know, outside lives were very successful, but then I saw them struggling with intense addictions and stuff, I realized that, you know, you never realize the pain that human beings are going through. So what I realized is that if you can tap into the suffering that almost all human beings have, you can build a tremendous amount of rapport with people. So when I interact with people today, I realize, you know, they all have suffering. So to answer your question, it started when I was 18, but then things kind of dipped. They got bad, and I literally went into a really bad state, but I had a taste of, oh, I can actually come out of my shell, not my shyness shell, artificially. Well, how do I do that in a healthy way? You know, and I literally, you know, I got clean. And I'm a big believer in personal development, obviously. I'm a big believer in recovery, and, you know, I'm not going to make this conversation about that. I will just tell you that I really needed to go to some dark places in order to realize that I actually had some, you know, some abilities and some skills. So what I decided, I somehow developed a value system that be the ray of sunshine in people's lives. Whenever you're interacting with someone, I have a philosophy that, you know, be nice to the people you meet on the way up, to the same people you meet on the way down. I mean, you've probably heard that before, you know, it's a cliche. A lot of people, if they go and rent a house or they rent a car, they will, you know, drive over curbs and speed bumps, and they'll leave garbage everywhere. They'll trash it. Whereas I try to think of human beings as, like, if I'm going to interact with someone, I want to leave them better off than they were before they met me. And, you know, if that's even, you know, a waiter or a waitress, you know, making a joke. Sometimes it could be just being funny. Sometimes it could be being ridiculous. Sometimes it could just be courteous, you know, open doors for people. Say thank you. Say, you know, follow what Dan Sullivan calls the referability habit. You know, do what you say you're going to do. Finish what you start. You know, say please and thank you. You know, that sort of stuff. Show up on time. You know, those sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
None of it's rocket science. But that has helped me a lot. And I also, you know, there's people that are givers and there are people that are takers.
Mm-hmm.
There's a book called Give or Take written by a guy I've recently met named Adam Grant. And he says in life there's givers, takers, and matchers. You know, takers just take. Givers give. Matchers, it's like a quid pro quo sort of relationship.
Keep score. They keep score.
Exactly. And I believe life gives to the giver and takes from the taker. So we were talking earlier before, you know, we started recording, and there's that term learned helplessness where someone's like, well, I can't go out and meet people, or I can't do this, I can't do that. And they get themselves into this belief system that they truly are not capable. And who's to say that you can't be capable? I mean, even Dalai Lama said in The Art of Happiness that happiness is a skill. It can be learned. So developing relationships can be learned. I learned this sort of stuff, and I put myself out there because I realized that if I want to make money, if I want to have relationships, if I want to get anything that this world can afford me, it's going to come through other people. I mean, how many people in complete isolation live full, enjoyable lives? You can make a lot of money, but is that a complete way to live? Absolutely not. So time is not money. I've never woken up in next to my alarm clock, if I'm using an alarm clock, there's a pile of money. Money comes from relationships, and so I needed to go out and develop and nurture those things, just like any other skill. You know, John, you're in great physical shape. Why? Because you devote time daily to that. You've had success in business because you've devoted time to that. Well, you need to devote time to this. So anyone listening to this, I mean, if you were to look back on my life, you know, now, of course, people are always asking me, you know, how do you meet Richard Branson? How do you meet Bill Gates? How do you, you know, they're enamored by all the famous people and stuff. But I'll tell you, even with all the famous people, and I know quite a lot of them, they have train wreck lives in certain parts of their lives, too. They have challenges and obstacles. And I mean, I know people that are incredibly wealthy, that are incredibly insecure.
Absolutely.
And their financial success was a byproduct of, you know, they didn't know how to direct this fear. So it came out of, you know, it came out of some neurotic sort of fear. And they somehow channeled it, which is better than, you know, not producing anything. But at the same time, you know, I mean, all of this can be developed. And so I can give you some kind of steps on how to do it and how to interact. I just wanted to throw some.
Yeah, I want to get there for sure. I want to ask you, though, Joe, when did you realize that like, I remember just a couple weeks ago I saw Brendon Burchard's promotional video for 25K Group, your 25K Group for Genius Network, and he said something so interesting. He said that once you've maxed out your potential, once you've taken your talent as far as you can go, there's only one way for you to go farther, and that's through and with relationships with other people. And if there's anything that's defined your career, I mean, I've seen your career just explode over the last 5 or 6 years, and I mean, you have just been able to develop deep relationships to leverage them, and you leverage them through contribution. Your career has really become about relationships. When did you figure it out? Like, early on, was there ever a light bulb that went off in your head that said, holy cow, this is going to be my path? These relationships are going to be what help me build the career that I want on this planet.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that did it for me is when I started learning direct response marketing. You know, because marketing is kind of what you say and who you say it to. And if you want to catch fish, you have to have the right bait. It's got to be bait that the fish wants. As a marketer, you need to enter a conversation that's existing in the prospect's mind. It's really studying and learning about human behavior. And so I use a type of marketing called direct response, where it's not just about getting your name out there, but it's about getting your name out there and getting a response back. It's about developing specific offers. So I think of networking as genius networking. I think of networking as direct response networking. I don't think of, like, you know, social networking or a bunch of Facebook fans or collecting a bunch of business cards or meeting a bunch of people. I think of it as, you know, who has wisdom, knowledge, skills, and capabilities that would be really interesting, useful to me, that would give me direction, that would give me skills, and how can I interact with these people, and why should they give it to me? I believe that I'm not entitled to anything, and if I get anything in my life, it's because I produce results. You know, the world doesn't owe me anything, so I kind of have that mindset. And so if it's kind of the, if you want fire, you got to put in, you know, the wood. And so I interact with people. I never ask anyone to do anything for me if I can't create value for them first. And I learned that through marketing, where I had a carpet cleaning company and I was living off of credit cards and I was dead broke and I didn't know how to promote myself. And so one of the ways that I turned that all around was I started using education-based marketing. I started doing the complete opposite of what every one of my competitors was doing, which is advertising price and talking about here's what we got and here's how much it costs. I started saying, okay, let me teach you how to hire a professional cleaner. And now this sounds bizarre, but you know, people that don't know me, I run the highest level direct response marketing group in the world for high level entrepreneurs. I mean, people pay a lot of money to, you know, invest in my group. And I have a billionaire in my group. So I work with, you know, people running very successful companies. You know, most of my friends are, you know, very financially successful. So, but they're not successful in the relationship area. So I bring them together to develop and do this. So what I started doing is I started just being incredibly useful. You know, learned helplessness is how some people get, and learned helpfulness is I learned how to be incredibly helpful. I started creating more value for people, and I didn't tie it into anything needed to come back to me. I mean, it's truly an abundance mindset versus a scarcity mindset. If you play not to win, or if you play, you know, not to lose, you're not going to win. If you play to win, you're going to play to win. It doesn't mean you're always going to win, but it does mean you're going to have a much different attitude about it. You've heard cliches like, what would you be willing to attempt to do if you knew you could not fail? Now, I've seen that on posters, I've seen that on notepads, I've seen that on people's screensavers. It's a really interesting question, though. You know, everyone listening to this, what would you attempt to do if you knew you could not fail? And I'll tell you, everything you would attempt to do, the commonality, there would be a relationship involved with it in most cases. You know, there's someone, this whole thing about financial independence, well, you know, I know what that means. The truth is, though, this all is done through other human beings.
Well, let me ask you this, Joe. Now we get into some advice here, because, you know, if you're famous, you're successful, you're wealthy, you're incredibly connected. Now it's easy for you, really, it's easy for you to pick up the phone and meet just about anyone in the world that you want to meet. But for our listeners, you know, like, you know, just sort of normal everyday people, obviously successful, conscious people that are listening to this program, if they want to get connected to a mentor or, you know, a big name, one of their heroes, one of their idols, what would your advice be to them on how to make that happen? Like, when before you were where you are today, what were some of the creative ways that you got the attention of the people that you most wanted to meet?
Okay, well, if you don't have any money, and if you do have money, you can hire people. You can pay to get access. That's how people do it all the time. You know, you want to go to a concert, you know, you pay money to do it. You want to go to a doctor, you pay for an office visit. Sometimes you just pay to meet people. You know, I mean, a lot of people ask, how'd you meet Richard Branson? You know, I get that all the time because I'm Richard Branson's largest fundraiser, and I've interviewed him more than probably anyone, and I've spent, you know, over a month of my life on Necker Island, you know, that sort of thing. And it's, you know, I gave a donation to his foundation in order to have dinner with him, and then I parlayed that into doing an interview with him, and I, you know, gave $200,000 to his foundation to have him, you know, speak at one of my events via, you know, live stream satellite. He wasn't even there in person. And then I ended up turning that into doing, you know, personalized trips to Necker Island and that sort of stuff.
Now, let me just say this. I can vouch for that strategy, because the way I met you was through my dear friend and mentor, Nathaniel Brandon, who I literally hired. I hired to do some psychology work with me, you know, 2 decades ago. And I mean, literally just picked up the phone, called his office, hired him for $200 an hour to talk to me a couple times a week, developed a super close relationship with him, and he ended up eventually introducing me to you. So I can absolutely vouch for that particular strategy.
Right, exactly. So if you don't have any money, though, what you do have is you have time and energy, because those are the only three things you can spend: time, money, and energy. So if you don't, when I didn't have any money, the way that I met people is I'd read their books, I would sincerely, and when I say met people, I'm talking about in a business realm. Now, if you want to go up and just talk to someone in general, I mean, part of it is just being able to go up and interact and talk. And the way you do that is...
But no, we're talking about sort of mentors and idols. We're talking about, you know, more in a business realm or famous people.
Okay, so first off, understand that all famous people, all busy people, all successful people, the perception that the public has of them as being these untouchables is rarely reality, although a lot of them are guarded, a lot of them are difficult to get access to. However, you can usually find out where they at, where are they going. Sometimes you can attend their events. The easiest thing, and I've met so many people, is I would simply read their books, go to their seminars, listen to what it is they do, and I would send them a letter. I was doing this before, you know, the internet even existed. And even to this day, in most cases, my team are sending out at least, you know, 10 personal letters, thank you, sincere things a day from me. I still handwrite notes. You know, I learned this from a few ex-presidents of the United States that would literally mail personal cards to people because it would blow their minds. And if I tell people in business, if you were to write 10 postcards or 10 personal letters handwritten and mail them, you know, 5 times a week, so Monday through Friday, say, in a year, your relationships will be completely different. Not everyone's going to respond.
And now they're even more rare. I mean, how often do you get a letter? How often do you get a handwritten letter? You know, you get a million emails a day, but now it's even, like, more special.
Exactly. And people respond to that. I mean, it's basic human courtesy, and it's things that hardly anyone does. And, I mean, 10 a day, if you do that for a year, you will have a completely different life. I can promise anyone that.
Amazing strategy, man. What a great, powerful piece of advice.
Yeah, and most people will hear it, and most people won't do it. But the 5% of people that are the most successful in life are the ones that are willing to do the things that the 95% are not willing to do. I mean, it's as simple as that. So be one of those people. And so the way I would send sincere, you know, thank yous, or I love this, and I started doing interviews with people. Now, I've interviewed over 400 incredibly successful people, and I've got a lot of personal friends. I mean, you know, today, you know, I've interviewed, you know, I mean, I won't, I'm really good at clever name dropping. and of course, I've figured out how to use that as an art form because for some reason people get fascinated with that. But it all started as this carpet cleaning guy that's trying to learn how to do business with people. And I wouldn't go out and say, can I pick your brain? I don't like that term because it's kind of, you might as well say, can I pick your pocket? You know, if your time is valuable, offer them something. So sometimes it would be just, you know, you buy their book or you buy some of their books and truly do it. Say, you know, I bought 10 books and I gave it to some of my friends because it impacted me so much. I would love to take you to lunch. I would love to have a phone conversation with you. And if you can offer to pay for it, do it. And if you can't, offer them something else in value. But refer them, make a contact with them on their birthdays. If you really want to meet someone, find out an anniversary or a birthday or some significant time of the year where it gives you an excuse to interact with them. And believe me, reciprocity works really well. You can send gifts to people. You can send sincere, you know, forms of appreciation. Now, I have a process that was figured out, John. I'd like to go through it quickly, and I'm happy to provide you with a PDF that you can share with, you know, everyone in Lifebook if they want to, you know.
Sure, would love that.
Yeah, and it's called the Magic Rapport Formula. And I was interviewed by a lady named Fabienne Fredrickson, who was one of my Genius Network members, and she wanted to interview me about relationship building, and she wanted to know, how do you build rapport? And so I went through this 90-minute, you know, conversation with her, and at the end of it, she said, well, I've listened to everything you said, and I, you know, broke it up into this process, this magic rapport formula, and I've actually taken this and turned it into a checklist, and so I'll go through it. And then it's, you know, the first thing is to focus on how you will help someone reduce their suffering. That's like the starting point. And believe it or not, if you have an incredibly busy person, what can you do to help them with their time? How can you help them grow and build their business? Is there a foundation or a hobby or some area that they're genuinely interested in? And the most important three words is, you know, ask. You know, ask people. Wayne Gretzky has that great line, you know, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. However, ask doesn't mean expect. There's a big difference between asking somebody for something or, you know, just expecting they should do it because you pay attention to them. So you have to show up with some value. And take the standpoint of where can you actually help the person reduce suffering. All people go through it. The second is what I said already, invest time, money, and energy on relationships. You know, just simply determine, you know, what entry point where you can, you know, where you can access that person from, and if you can do it with money, great. Sometimes you can just offer to help somebody. I've had some of the best relationships. People have come into my world where they want to work in my company for free. You know, I don't get that a lot, but the ones that actually, if they truly don't have money, but they're like, I'm willing to trade my time because I want to do something for you, I want to help you with something, I really, you know, admire those people. And most of the time, I won't have them work for me, but I'll certainly have a phone call with them and stuff if they're sincere. And the third thing is, be the type of person that, you know, they will always answer the phone for. You know, do you ever get calls, John, from people on your mobile phone, and some people you immediately want to answer because you're super excited?
They're the ones that give you energy. They're the ones that make you, you know, you want to talk to them. You look forward to talking to them because you always feel good afterwards, versus the ones that's just like, no way, I'm not answering that one.
Exactly. You want to be a fountain, not a drain. And a lot of people in life, they're energy drainers. They're not energy chargers. And if people aren't taking your phone calls, you really got to look at, like, why am I annoying? And you can ask some of your best friends, you know, why do they answer your calls? You know, what turns them off about you? Most people won't do this because it really gets too close to their, you know, their self-esteem and their self-worth. But truly, if you want to be better, you know, why do people like you? What is cool about you, and how do you magnify that? How do you be awesome, and how can you be more awesome for another person? And you'll soon find, if you start thinking about, why do you dislike this person? And when I say dislike, I mean the area where discrimination is important in life is some people aren't equal in terms of the value they crave for you than others. So you're not going to treat everyone as equal. That is stupid. I mean, you know, certain people will really be in your corner, and other people are just showing up so they can extract something from you in a very parasitical way. You want to eliminate that. You want to get those sort of negative, dishonest takers out of your life, and you want to be one of these people that is so awesome when they talk to you, and when you're calling them, you're that ray of sunshine. You are that person that is great. And that doesn't require you to be an extroverted, you know, super eloquent, articulate human being. It just means you just need to be useful, and you need to be helpful, which is number four. So be useful, grateful, and valuable. You know, always ask yourself, how can I be useful to someone? You know, what's one thing that I could be grateful for about this person that I can communicate to them? You know, be, you know, constantly build that, the confidence in being useful, grateful, and valuable. And that's how you develop what I call a genius network. You know, a genius network is having a network of people that have true capabilities and wisdom that help catapult you in your life. And the way that you actually build your genius network is, I have even a tool for this where, you know, what's the person's skill and capability that they have? Like, who are they? What's their capability or skill? What can you do for them? And then what can they do for you? A lot of people that are really bad at developing relationships, the primary thing in their mind is, oh, I need something. I don't know if you ever had a pickup truck when you were younger, John. Did you ever have a pickup truck?
Like a little kid pickup truck, or like,
oh no, like a real pickup truck that had like a bed in it, like a, you know, a Ford or like a mini.
No, I'm not quite that masculine. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, maybe you had a wagon, but okay. But let's imagine you had a. I'm sure you've experienced this. I remember, you know, in high school or right out of high school when I was younger, I had a pickup truck, and I'd have some friends. The only time I would ever hear from them is if they needed something.
When they needed to move stuff.
Yeah. Can you help me with a sofa? Can you bring? Never hear from them. And there are a lot of people that, like, the time you hear from them is when they need something from you. And the difference between a friend and an acquaintance, you know, in a lot of cases. And so, you know, your very best friends, you give your very best friends some slack when they're jerks or when things aren't going as well. But a lot of people that all they're showing up is, you know, takers, then, you know, you don't want anything to do with them. So the fifth one is, treat others as you would love to be treated. I mean, this is nothing profound about that. However, it's true. And you want to be memorable, and you want to wow people in all areas. And one of the greatest skills of a marketer, and also one of the greatest skills of, you know, just being a great relationship builder, is being empathetic. You know, just I have a friend in a wheelchair named Dave Kekich, and we have this on this PDF that we'll send out to everyone. He says that long-term success is built on credible on credibility and on establishing enduring relationships with quality people based on mutually earned trust. Cut all ties with dishonest, negative, and lazy people and associate with people who share your values. Now, what's great about Lifebook, and a lot of people may not think of it this way, the greatest thing about Lifebook is it's not saying, here's the values that you should adopt and the seven, principles here that you should adopt. It's about your life. It's about your value system. And what a lot of people do that come across as fake and artificial is they want people to accept them for who they pretend to be. You know what I mean? And so you want to develop yourself based on your value system, and that's what Lifebook allows you to do. It helps you get clear on what's important to you in all these different categories. And by doing so, you get really clear on who do you want in your life. Who are the type of relationships that you have? And so then you can really find people that you're aligned with and people that you're in sync with. And so we'll go on to the next one. The next one is number six, avoid formalities, be fun and memorable and not boring. I can gauge the value of a relationship by how much someone laughs together.
It came to my mind. I've sat in a lot of business meetings with you, and the last one in particular, it was so friggin' hilarious. You come out in your shorts and your tank top, and here we got, the guys in suits, right, with the ties, and the ladies in their little friggin' Chanel, whatever. And you use off-color humor, irreverence, and sometimes you're pushing the edge of appropriateness, but it's awesome. And what it does, I in this last business meeting, I sat there and watched you just knock these people off their normal, protocol, their normal way of doing things, completely sort of disarm them. And then it's like, oh, we're going to be real people here. We're not going to be stuffed shirts and go through all this bureaucratic formality. We're going to talk about real stuff in plain words. And that meeting ended up being one of the most productive meetings I've had all year, because you friggin' knocked them off of their, it was unbelievable. You were informal, definitely fun, at least I had fun, absolutely not boring and memorable. I love that one, especially applied to business, Joe.
No, exactly. What Bab Smith, who runs Strategic Coach, she's Dan Sullivan's partner in business and in life, and she said, you charm and disarm people. That's what you do. You charm them with sometimes incredibly off-color stuff. I mean, I really push the edge. I'm slightly inappropriate, but I'm not cruel. And I really know how to respect, I do have boundaries. And there are many things. What I want to do, though, as quickly as possible, is we live in a world that people need to lighten the hell up. I mean, really. There's so many things that are awesome, and there are many things that are incredibly painful. Lighten up, you'll live longer, as my friend Dave Kekich says. Things are seldom as great as they seem when they're going well, and they're seldom as bleak as they seem when they're going wrong. And this is a guy who's paralyzed from the chest down. He's endured things that I couldn't even imagine in his life, and he still managed to become a very optimistic, very successful human being in spite of the inability to have sex, the inability to walk, living his life in a wheelchair, having to take an hour just to use the restroom to get going in the day. I mean, things that I and most people don't have to encounter. And his whole thing is, lighten up. I mean, really. And I've taken a lot from that. Having laughter in conversations, anti-corporate stuff where everyone tries to act like they're so damn professional. I mean, give me a break. When people go home, they're going to be...
It's such a waste of time. It's such a friggin' waste of time. And that's what your style, it was just... Because I do that too, but not near like as hardcore and as you do. And just sitting there watching that happen, you took the few minutes that it took to just completely destroy the normal protocol of a meeting. And then from that point forward, we were telling the truth, and we were talking honestly, and we had meaningful conversations. It was so much better than the bureaucratic nonsense that people go through.
Exactly. And I'll tell you this. I heard this a long time ago, John, and I'm sure you can relate to this, and I'm sure everyone listening can relate to this. When you're talking to someone, face-to-face, you're either in communication or you're trying to escape. Those are the two sides of it. You can be talking to someone, and their eyes could be like, wandering or thinking about something else, and they're trying to get out of there. So it's like, I don't like interacting with people where you're just kind of there, but you really don't want to be there. And everyone's kind of mentally distracted. So you know, part of it is getting all of those walls down as much as you can. I mean, there's a time and a place. I mean, most people have drank beer. Many people have gone to church. Most people don't drink beer in church. I mean, there are certain things that you do
right.
contextually and things like that. But when it comes to relationships, you know, the more you can just be fun and be enlightened and just be a real human being, the easier you're going to interact, the more you're going to get work done. So, you know, be a goofball if you have to. And if that's not within your personality, you know, it's not. I will tell you this, though. Everyone would be well served if they went to an improv comedy class or if they went to clown school. As ridiculous as that seems, I mean, I've sent half my staff to improv, including one guy who is incredibly shy, I mean, painfully shy, and it totally opened up his world. I mean,
wow.
It was challenging for him to actually do it, but man, was he so thankful that he was willing to work through the burn. You know, just like working out, the first couple of weeks, you're going to hurt, but if you work through the burn, you start growing, you start developing that muscle, and if you're willing to do that, that's how you accomplish almost anything in any area, including, you know, building relationships. So the seventh one is appreciate people. You know, people are doing the very best they can with the resources they have. That's one thing you got to understand about humans, is that most people are just doing the best they know how to do. And, you know, to use the economic term of depreciation, you know, going down in value, treat people in such a manner to where they go up in value. Always appreciate them. Say thank you. I cannot stand it when I see someone opening a door for someone. The person walks out and they don't even say thank you. Or they're not nice to people. You know, they're nice to people that are above them or have high status, but then they treat wait staff like crap. Or,
right.
You know, they don't acknowledge a maid at a hotel or something. I mean, like, give me a break. I mean, be nice to people and appreciate them, because your value will go up in their eyes and they will always remember you. And that's what's so great. Celebrate people's achievement. Acknowledge people, and they will blossom. You know, like I said earlier, be a fountain and not a drain. Number eight, this is one of the most important ones for me on how I've developed relationships with a lot of people and how I connect a lot of people. Give value on the spot. You know, when I started in marketing, I would always use education-based marketing. I would share my expertise with people. To this day, I mean, I have two podcasts on iTunes. One's called I Love Marketing. It's the top marketing podcast in the world on iTunes. And we give away free advice, better advice on marketing than what most people charge for. And most people that listen to it are never going to, you know, give me any money. But it makes me feel really good that a lot of people that are all over the world that every day listen, I mean, you know, tens of thousands of people every day listen to my podcast on business and building and growing a business. And a lot of them will never give me money. But what's wonderful about it is I'm giving them tremendous value. It's a way that I've learned how to leverage it. Now, I wasn't doing that in the very beginning. A lot of it was just one-on-one, however I could, you know, give value. Sometimes it's...
Well, I remember, Joe, at the beginning of our relationship, one of the things that just impressed me so much about you that's unusual is that you're just so incredibly generous with your relationships. You're the most connected person I know, but I know a lot of connected people. I know a lot of successful people that know a lot of other successful people, and I found that some people who have a lot of contacts are either very stingy with their contacts, or they want to connect people because they know that that's the way that the deals get done, but they don't want to connect people directly. They want to always stay in the middle so they can manage that relationship and squeeze however much value they can out of either side. The thing about you from the very beginning, you take instant action. So we're sitting there at dinner and we're talking about something. I'm talking to you about, you know, one of my companies and a need that I have. And you're like, oh, hold on a second. Let me get David Bach on the phone. He wrote a whole friggin' chapter about that in his book. And you're dialing the number. And here we are in the middle of our salads. Here, John, David's on the phone. Tell him what you just said. I mean, it's really an extraordinary thing that you do. You're so generous with your relationships, and you really do create value on the spot. I mean, I'm glad you said that this is one of the most important things to you, because you really live that. You live this particular rule so well.
Well, yeah, and one thing that drives me nuts is I will be sitting, I've had dinners with people that are multimillionaires, like running big businesses, and there'll be a young person that's asking a question, and they'll want to know the answer to it, and the person that knows the answer to it won't tell them. It won't just volunteer it. And I'll be like, why? I mean, what do you, you know, rotting food doesn't get better with age. It gets worse. I mean, what do you think is going to happen? Like, it's fine china. You can only use it once a year. I mean, it actually makes you better. If you really know something and you put it out, I think there's, you know, there's a karmic sort of, I think, response.
I agree.
And I don't, I just, it is mind-boggling to me where someone can create value. To describe that person you're talking about, there's actually, there is a term for those people in a certain context. They're called pimps. And they're, you know, they're trying to be the middleman, and they just don't
right.
want, you know, I mean, it's really a form of exploitation, you know, and it's really a scarcity mindset. They're like, oh, I got to be careful giving out my relationships because that's the only thing that I got. As far as I'm concerned, you know, you see all of these industries that are destroying the middleman because they're so trying to hold it. They're trying to create a monopoly, and they
yep.
won't let anyone get close. But the type of monopoly that we all want in our lives is a value creation monopoly, which is a term that my friend Dan Sullivan, you know, came up with, which is people grant you all of the access because you're so damn valuable to them. And, you know, if you don't trust the person, why are you hanging out with the person? You know,
yeah.
trust, rapport is trust with comfort. You don't just want to trust someone. You want to feel comfortable with them. And
well, I think it's less that that these people don't trust you. I think that their mindset, they're brokers. Just like you said, you call them pimps, middleman brokers. The bottom line is they're brokers in relationships. And as opposed to just being just so generous and connecting everybody. And what happens when you do that? Dude, people appreciate you so incredibly much. You get that back. Versus the relationship brokers, you appreciate the deals they bring you. But the way that they do it doesn't really ingratiate them in your mind. You know what I mean?
Exactly. You know, they're, you're always like suspect. And the thing is, now certainly there's a context to this too. There are certain times where you introduce someone and how you do it if there's a big deal on the line, or worse, if you think you're in some sort of situation where you've put a tremendous amount of work and someone's going to try to screw you out of the deal. So certainly, I mean, I don't want to make a blanket statement that there's never that context. Me, I've never had a problem with it. I never worry about it. I am free to share as much value as I can with people, and it's worked for me. You know, all I can gauge is it's how it's worked for me. And I have a lot of people, you know, if you want to know how valuable your relationships are from a money standpoint, you know, how many people can you call in the middle of the night with a gigantic emergency that I need a check for $25,000. I cannot explain why. I just need it. And, you know, granted, you know, people that aren't think you're going to commit some terrible illegal act. I'm talking about like you really have an emergency. You know, how many people could you call in the middle of the night and they would cut a check for 25 grand just because they would do it? Most people, if they're lucky, may have one or none. I have dozens of people because I have created so much value, and I always think about creating value on the spot. So I have a tremendous amount of security that's taken me years
exactly.
to build that level of stuff. But, you know, it's like, and there's a lot of people that have created so much value for me that if they called me in the middle of the night, and if it wasn't money, if it was something, I would do everything. I would move mountains to help these people because they are really helpful. It's not a lot, but it's a few, and it's certainly more than most people. So the give value on the spot is in connect one. I would say this to everyone listening. If this is not something you're used to, connecting people, try to think of at least one person a week that you can connect to someone else that would help that other person solve their problem or help them reach their opportunity. Because what people are dealing with is problems, challenges, and opportunities. Help them eliminate a problem, eliminate a challenge, improve a challenge, or reach an opportunity. Who do you know? And if you don't know a person, it might be a book. So connect them with some form of value that would facilitate them, that would give them better direction, better capability, better confidence, better clarity in any area of their life. If you know something about fitness that will help someone, you know something about pain removal that will help someone, something about addiction, something about parenting, something that will help someone be more spiritual, whatever, those are all forms of value. So think about it. Brainstorm and just get into the habit of connecting people. That alone will create relationship capital that you can truly take to the bank. Right. And then the ninth one is get as close to in person as you can. Now, we live in a very, you know, we are more connected than we ever have been in history, in electronically, but we're more disconnected than we ever have been in human beings. So, you know, pick up the phone, call people, have a real human interaction. Don't just interact with people through social media or through email or texting. I mean, it's silly. So if you can't get as close to, you know, a person in person as, you know, if you can't do that, then I rely on the human voice. I will record audios. I will record videos. you know, and I always see this too. It's like, hey, you know, we should, you know, get together for lunch or get together for dinner. Well, here's what I, and I think about this with sales. Yeses are great. Those are the greatest. Nos are good. Maybes, those are the things that'll kill you. You know, a salesperson doesn't want to hear maybe. Like either yes, I'm interested, or no, I'm not. Maybe is kind of like, then you're always left on the line. And if you really are not going to get together with someone in the future, or you just know it's not a right fit, just tell them. You know, I mean, you don't have to be mean about it. You could say, you know, this doesn't fit into where I'm going in my life right now. And one of the nicest things you can do to a person is not keep them hanging on the line. If you're not going to interact with them in the future, then just say, no, we can't do this. My dance card is full in this particular area. But if you really are going to get together with someone, they're like, hey, let's do lunch. It's like, well, how about like now? You know, we should really talk at some point. Well, why don't we talk right now? And if you can't do that, then at least schedule something. And I love the voice. The human voice says so much more than what can be conveyed with just words in an email or a text. And so I shoot videos all the time. And if I need to make a connection with someone, I'll record. If I'm with someone and I want to connect them with someone else, I will literally pull out my iPhone. I'll shoot a, you know, 40-second video and say, hey, I want you to meet so-and-so for this reason. I'm going to connect both of you. I have put together multi-million-dollar deals with people simply by an audio text or video text. That's as close as I could get in person. And I want to say
this, guys, that you're listening to this interview. This is really one of the. You're listening to one of the guys that's best at relationships that you'll ever hear in your life. And this is really one of the unique strategies that Joe uses. He more than sending texts, more than sending emails, I will get a 30-second video from Joe when he's introducing me to somebody, or he'll record a quick voice message. It's 45 seconds, but it's a different level of communication. It connects more deeply and more powerfully. It makes you feel a special way, a different way. I don't know anyone else, literally, Joe. I don't think I know anyone else that does that but you. We all have the technology. We're holding the iPhone, right? I mean, we can all do it, but we just don't do it. I mean, I don't do it, and I should do it, and I think I'm going to start doing it.
Well, and I'll tell you this, John. One easy way for everyone to do this is if you know, unfortunately, both my parents have passed away, so I can't do this to my parents. If you have family members or friends that you really care about, just try it. Just as a test. And then on the people you want to meet as mentors, as the people that you want to connect in business situations, just try it. Say, you know, mom, dad, my brother, sister, if you hate them, obviously you have to find people you like. But if you really admire and appreciate and love them, just tell them, you know, I just want to
let you
know.
That would be huge.
Yeah. It just and see what will happen. It's so much different than an email, and it's certainly better than ignoring somebody. And I'll tell you, a lot of times I don't want to talk to certain people because I don't simply have the time, but I can record something that will just maintain and sustain, and they know I care, and they know, I will drip on people that are important to me, because there's only a handful of people that are the biggest game changers in your life. And those are the people you never want to neglect. There are people that will really go out of their way to help you. There are teachers. There are people that have supported you. And acknowledge those people. I mean, be nice to the people you meet on the way up. They're the same people you meet on the way down. It's true.
I want to go into that a little bit more with you. But before I do that, let me just go ahead and cover these 9 points. And Lifebook VIPs, we're going to publish this PDF that Joe has provided to us. So number one, focus on how you're going to help your relationships reduce their suffering. Number two, invest time, money, and energy in your relationships. Number three, be the type of person that they would always answer the phone for. Number four, be useful, grateful, and valuable. Number five, treat others as you would like to be treated. Six, avoid formalities. Be fun, memorable, and not boring. Seven, appreciate people. Eight, give value on the spot. If I had to choose just one that I think Joe really personifies more than any other, that's the one that, you know, that represents who he is. And number nine, get as close to in person as you can. Great, Joe. I really appreciate that list. I'm sure that our VIPs will find this PDF useful. As our time comes to an end here, this is an important question that I have. You are one of the most connected people I know. You have Dozens and dozens and dozens. Hundreds. I know for a fact. You've got hundreds of incredibly important relationships. My question is, how do you manage to nurture and keep all those relationships healthy simultaneously? Nathaniel Brandon's wife, Devers, said to me once, John, a relationship that really matters to you is worth at least 2 dinners a year. That's the minimum. 2 dinners a year. That's what you gotta sort of pay to maintain the relationships you care about. But when I think about, you know, your list of social people, it boggles my mind. How do you keep those people close and feeling nurtured and connected to you?
Well, you know, I use a little bit of my own marketing advice. I drip on people quite a bit. I have set up automated systems with databases where we actually send emails to people. I have my marketing podcast, so a lot of people that, you know, I can't always reach out to personally and say have dinner with, although what you just said, 2 dinners, it's a great piece of advice. And some people don't work with people internationally. I have friends all over the planet, so I will send them via email a interview. We get people to subscribe to my stuff. So I'm always dripping on people without me having to even monitor and maintain it. Now, for personal relationships, I'm always reaching out via text with audio and video mostly. If there's something I come across, we will send it to them. We keep track of everyone's birthday. So the people that we can get their birthdays, I even put it in my calendar. It's on my phone. I know when it's a personal friend's birthday, and I will either personally call them, or I will send a video or a text just expressing happy birthday. I have this very funny video on YouTube that, for social media, every time someone on Facebook, their birthday comes up, we just send them a happy birthday from me and Richard Branson. If someone typed into YouTube, Joe Polish, Richard Branson, happy birthday, they'll see an 11-second video of me and Richard. We want to wish you a happy birthday. Everyone gets that, you know, automatically sent. So every day, dozens and dozens of people are getting happy birthday videos from me that are automatically set up from, you know, an autoresponder that's set up. So those are the little things that I do robotically to handle thousands of clients, you know, and many, many, many people. Now,
tell me about because you have dozens and dozens and dozens of really, really close friends. On a more personal note, how do you manage so many relationships, Joe?
Yeah, well, I do have a wonderful assistant named Eunice.
Yeah, for sure.
Who's been with me for 19 years, so she definitely helps me. When it comes holiday season, we have a list of everyone that we need to send things to. And I frankly spend thousands of dollars on the holidays just sending things to people. But I don't send them like a bunch of garbage candy and stuff that's unhealthy. I mean, we'll send them, you know, really useful things, books, knowledge, things along those lines. And I'll tell you, John, I mean, it's not easy. I mean, you have to be willing to devote the time
right,
to this.
Exactly.
You know, my buddy Brendan Bouchard, who's one of my clients and one of my close friends, I mean, he's all over the place. And he was telling me about one of our friends who's not in great shape. And Brendan really works on his energy level. He has like this high performance stuff that he does, and he's speaking all the time, so he needs to maintain his voice and his energy level. And he was telling me about a mutual friend that said to him, you know, I wish I had the energy of you. And Brendan said, I was so pissed about that. He's like, yeah, I have the energy because I work on having the energy. I take the time to learn this stuff. I mean, it's not just I was genetically granted this energy level. This is something I've developed. I mean, and, you know, anything worth having in life, you're going to have to put the time and effort into it. So it's just where you place in the priorities. And again, I'll have to, you know, I've been through Lifebook twice, and I want to tell people that is a roadmap and a blueprint, and I hope as much as you can sustain that in your life and share it with other people. One great way to build relationships, if you've gotten value out of Lifebook, and you probably wouldn't be listening to this conversation if you didn't, who do you know that you could refer into Lifebook? How could you take your Lifebook and share what you have learned and how it's impacted your life? That is a form of value creation. And if you can, say, for instance, you have someone really important in your life, literally, if you can afford it, you have the money, and you're at a financial state, send them to Lifebook. A lot of times, I will take my best relationships and I will buy things for them. I will send them to places. I will let them do a coaching call with someone that I know would be transformational in their life. I don't have to personally be on the call, but it allows them to do that, and it comes back to me. You know, not I don't gauge everything by money. I mean, there's five ways that you get paid for what you do. This is something I learned from Dan Sullivan. One way is you get rewarded with money. The second way you get paid is people appreciate you. The third way you get paid is they utilize you. The fourth way you get paid is they refer you. And the fifth way you get paid is they enhance you. And the most important thing for me in that criteria is, does it enhance me first? So I only align myself with people that are aligned with me. I want people that utilize my advice in a business context. That's why I deal with very high-level people, because most of them listen to what it is that I suggest, and they utilize the format and the groups that I put together. The third is, do they appreciate me? The fourth, do they refer me? And fifth, do they pay me? So money is number five on my list, because there's a financial paycheck, but there's also the psychological paycheck. And so, you know, there's a lot there. And I think LifeBook and sharing that is a huge form of value creation, because by sharing it causes you to go deeper. I'm not saying this because I'm trying to disguise a clever way for people to promote LifeBook.
Oh, no, you've put so many people through and changed a lot of lives in the process, Joe.
Yeah, and see, that's the beauty of what LifeBook is. I mean, it is really, I'll tell the people listening, John doesn't need to do LifeBook for financial reasons. I mean, as a matter of fact, John has spent more money sharing LifeBook with the world than he's probably ever gotten paid back for it. He does it because it's a form of contribution. It's a form of value creation. And the reason that he's doing things like interviewing people like me and all the different people that you do is it's a form of bringing value for your clients. And one of the best ways to go deep with something is to teach it to other people. And if you want to go deep with the principles of LifeBook, share those principles with other people. Because I could talk about a bunch of other different things they have, but you got it sitting in your hands. It's called your life book. You've got this knowledge, and if you start going down this path, you can use that as a template to be a giant relationship builder and value creator. And one of the things I'm even encouraging John to do, I said, man, how many people out there, if there were like meetup groups, or if they could come to the LifeBook Lounge in Chicago and they could meet with other people and they could bring guests and they could share this. I mean, talk about the incredible community that could be developed.
Of like-minded people that have the same kind of value systems, that have been through the same process, that have brought the same level of consciousness to their lives. That's extremely valuable right there. It's like a vetting process, right?
Exactly. Totally. I mean, look, we all got to develop. People are like, well, you know, the world doesn't revolve around me. Well, no, it doesn't. But at the same time, it's your world, and you're going to get it to revolve the way that you set it up. If you want to have the conditions in your life, there are certain things that you got to set up in order to make that happen, and certainly that's going to come from relationships. And, you know, more than anything, at the end of my life, I just want a lot of people to think of me that I really encourage them. I encourage them because, you know, hope heals. And if you can give, you know, one thing I've taken from 12-step groups, there's a lot, you know, and it's not about, a lot of people don't understand 12 steps. A lot of people are anti-12 steps because they think it's about going to meetings. It's not an attendance program. It's a step program. And there are certain steps in it. But what 12 steps does is it takes people that have gone through horrible things. You know, there's human suffering involved in addiction, and it helps them bond. And the way that you bond with people is you actually have to connect with people. And if you're a little out of the mix and you're a little uncomfortable with this, just like working out, it might be a little difficult in the very beginning. But, you know, that's how you need to, you know, get some courage, and you need to go out there and do it. But in the process, you're going to discover so many things, and you will meet people that will change their life. And I think all of that can be built through the LifeBook community for a tremendous amount of people. And obviously, I wouldn't be... You know, I wouldn't be a big fan of this if I didn't see the benefits in my own life, because it's been absolutely profound.
Well, I love it, brother. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, Joe. You know, I admire excellence anywhere I see it in life, and you certainly have just taken this category to a level that I've never experienced in anyone before. You've taught me so much. You know, when you get to the end of your life, you're going to be more than appreciated. You've created so much value for so many people, and so much of it has been through the social category and just mastering relationships. So, I mean, it's been an honor to, I just really consider you a sage in this area. It's been a real honor to spend this time with you on the phone. We all greatly appreciate it.
You are welcome.
Okay, take care, my man. We'll talk soon.
Bye-bye. Good luck, everyone.
Bye-bye.